From the University of Southern California, and welcome to From Where We Are from Annenberg Radio News. For October 8th, 2015, I'm Carla Javier. First, a news update with Sebastian Vega.
California Congressman Kevin McCarthy delivered a surprise today for his Republican colleagues. The House Majority Leader dropped out of the race for Speaker of the House. He withdrew after a meeting that made it clear that opposition from the Conservative Freedom Caucus would prevent him from getting a simple majority. California Congresswoman Mimi Walters represents the 44th District in Orange. She's worked with McCarthy for over a decade.
Everybody in our conference was very shocked when he made his announcement, and I'm disappointed. And I think he would have been a great speaker.
Two other candidates are vying for speaker, Jason Chaffetz of Utah and Daniel Webster of Florida. Webster has the support of the Conservative Freedom Caucus, but neither candidate has widespread GOP support. The African Student Union at UCLA staged a protest today in reaction to a Kanye Western-themed fraternity party. Photos posted on social media show students in blackface and padded rear ends, prompting some to call the theme racially insensitive. Adrena Collins says that she's surprised that racism is still present in her university.
I don't know how else I could feel besides outrage. It's just astonishing to me that a year after Dear White People came out specifically addressing this, and like, universities at Dartmouth, this happened in 2010 at UCD, this isn't an isolated event, that we're still having these problems at these major institutions of higher learning.
Other students like Leonardo Filguay-Iris say people took a celebrity-inspired theme way too far.
Kanye Western doesn't really spark anything. It was kind of the way it was being talked about, I guess.
The Daily Bruin reported that the party was thrown by the Sigma Phi Epsilon fraternity and the Alpha Phi sorority. UCLA and the national chapter of the fraternity are investigating the Tuesday night party. A federal appeals court ruled today that Bikram yoga moves are not entitled to copyright protection. Bikram Chaudhary's popular hot yoga sued Evolution Yoga for copyright infringement, claiming that their 90-minute sequence was plagiarized. But the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals denied Bikram's claim because his routine was classified as a process designed to improve health, rather than an expression of an idea. Hundreds of people packed the California Coastal Commission meeting today. The commission is hearing testimony on a plan to expand the SeaWorld orca tanks in San Diego. Dozens of protesters from People for Ethical Treatment of Animals gathered before the meeting started in Long Beach. Ashley Byrne of PETA says her group opposes the expansion permit.
SeaWorld Blue World Project is a Hail Mary attempt at repairing their failing brand. And it's also a sneaky way of increasing the number of orcas that it could confine to its bleak prison.
The commission says it's received a lot of public pressure to deny the Blue World Project proposal. Here's Nwaki Schwartz.
So we've gotten about 200,000 emails, and those have been overwhelmingly against the project.
The commission is still meeting, and a vote could be taken by the end of the day. The California Community Foundation threw itself a 100th birthday party today by giving the community of LA an expensive gift. The foundation is one of the largest charitable donations in the country. As Kevin Walker reports, more than 400 civic leaders attended the special town hall to hear the good news.
There was a big round of applause when Antonia Hernandez made her big announcement. The president of the California Community Foundation pledged $1 billion in funding to county nonprofits over the next 10 years. She made the announcement at St. Sophia Cathedral in Mid-City to a group that included representatives from all 88 cities in LA County, Supervisor Mark Ridley-Thomas and LA Mayor Eric Garcetti. Jonathan Zeichner is executive director of A Place to Call Home, based in South LA. He hopes his nonprofit can benefit from the money, but he and others are still waiting for details.
You know, the constant conversation between the nonprofit sector and the philanthropic sector is, are you listening? Really important that it's a dialogue and that we can empower our constituents to be heard as well.
The money will be given out as grants, scholarships, and loans. Mayor Garcetti told the town hall, LA needs a step up to improve the city.
It is time for us to have LA pride, but a great city addresses its great challenges and reaches for great things.
A USC LA Times poll released this week shows that county residents want to be active within their communities, but don't have the time or know-how to go about it. Kevin Walker, Annenberg Radio News.
I'm Sebastian Vega, and it's 5 minutes after the hour.
ever wondered about the origins of curious words and phrases, here's Brianna Feldot with today's root source.
Halloween season, the time when apples are covered in caramel and jack-o'-lanterns are filled with tea lights. But who is Jack? One day in Ireland, stingy Jack convinces the devil to turn into a coin so Jack can use it to pay for his drink. Stingy Jack keeps the coin and leaves it next to the silver cross, which traps the devil. Jack agrees to release him only if the devil promises to leave him alone for 1 year. After a year, Jack meets the devil again and convinces him to climb up a tree. Trapped again! Jack makes the devil promise to leave him alone for 10 more years and not to claim Jack's soul after death. But surely, God would not allow such a stingy man into heaven. So when Jack dies, he's sent into the dark night with only a burning coal. Stingy carved a turnip and put the coal inside, forever to roam the earth as Jack of the Lantern. Maybe this year, I'll carve a turnip instead.
Health insurance used to be unaffordable for millions of Americans. A health emergency was often the tipping point for going into bankruptcy. The Affordable Care Act was designed to help people get quality and affordable health care coverage. It created an individual health exchange with 4 levels of plans: platinum, gold, silver, and bronze. The bronze plans are the riskiest. They're referred to as catastrophic coverage because they have high out-of-pocket deductibles to offset low monthly premiums. Reporter Neha Wadekar investigates whether the bronze plans are really achieving their goal of providing quality, affordable health care to people who need it most.
Carmen Amaya had a long crossing from her native El Salvador to the United States. Once here, she faced another long journey through the complex American healthcare system. I met Amaya at her office on the edge of downtown Los Angeles.
Good to meet you. Thank you.
Nice.
She immigrated to the United States over 20 years ago, but she shudders remembering the early days of living in this country without insurance. Amaya had just had her first child when she began experiencing major pain.
And I went back to the hospital because I wasn't feeling well, and because I had no insurance, right? They had me to wait all day long, and I was in pain. I was in pain. And my husband was there like, you know, my wife needs care. Can you please do something?
When someone finally came to check her in, Amaya told them she didn't have insurance or the $250 needed for an emergency room visit. She left without receiving care.
Yeah, I was crying. You know, I still like get like sensitive because, you know, when you need care, at least when I go to the hospital or clinic, is because I really need it, you know.
This experience showed Amaya how hard life could be without health insurance. One study found that in 2007, before the Affordable Care Act, 62% of all bankruptcies were related to medical debt. Amaya began working and got health care through her job, but a career switch left her without coverage once again. This time, Amaya was prepared. She investigated Covered California, the state's health exchange, and signed up for a bronze plan. But this year, during the open enrollment period, Amaya switched to a silver plan.
That's why I chose silver this year, because I compared the two plans, bronze from last year and silver from this year. I said, no, why should I be paying more and getting less, right? So now I'm getting more benefits and paying less. That's how I see it.
If this all sounds confusing, you're right. To learn more about how these plans work, I connected with Anthony Wright, the executive director of Health Access, a California patient advocacy organization. He says before the Affordable Care Act, companies sold a lot of junk insurance that had low premiums but didn't cover much.
So what the Affordable Care Act does is it does set a standard for essential benefits. Essential health benefits, and all plans need to cover essential health benefits. Again, the differential between the platinum gold, silver, bronze is not in what benefits are covered, but what the cost sharing is imposed. So at the platinum level, it's a very small deductible, it's a relatively small copay. At the platinum and gold level, you're getting access to care with lower cost sharing and copay. At silver, they start to get more, and at bronze, it basically becomes catastrophic coverage. It basically is, it covers some prime, you know, a couple of doctor visits and some preventative care, but basically anything else is on your own dime until you hit $5,000 or $6,000, and then everything will be covered.
What Wright describes is significant because it highlights the continuing plight of the people on the bottom of the income ladder. While they now have some basic coverage, they still face going into bankruptcy because of medical costs not covered by the bronze and silver. But health economist Jeffrey Joyce says those plans allow low-income patients to get into the insurance marketplace, sometimes for the first time. And, he says, having some insurance is better than having none at all.
It does do what insurance is we hope will do, is protect you from those big, big expenses. And it's worth it, you know, relative to rolling the dice and going uninsured, which many people did prior to healthcare reform.
Joyce points out that catastrophic coverage plans, like the one Amaya uses, are an efficient way to manage healthcare costs.
You make people more sensitive to price, because I think the belief is there's a lot of waste in healthcare, partly because we overconsume. I don't care if my doctor costs $300. I only pay a $10 copay. And people overuse medical care, and partly because of insurance. Just the nature of insurance.
Health economists believe that by asking patients to pay higher portions of their healthcare costs, there will be less misuse and abuse of the system. But this has not been Amaya's experience.
You know, when you need care, at least when I go to the hospital or clinic, is because I really need it. You know, thank God I'm not a healthy person. So when I go to the hospital, I think most of my community, we only go to a hospital or clinic when we're really sick. Unfortunately, that's how we are.
While Amaya agrees that some coverage is better than none, she is frustrated with how hard it is to navigate the system.
You know, I think it's a good thing to me, because before COVID California, I used to pay $300 a month for my health insurance. $300 compared to $39, that's a lot, right? So I'm grateful for COVID California. Let's that make clear. It's just too complicated. Yeah, I think they need to make it easier for the community to understand.
Whether or not people do understand will be revealed during next month's open enrollment period for the Affordable Care Act. Efforts are already underway in the California legislature to make the health insurance marketplace more efficient and easier for patients to navigate in anticipation of November enrollment. Neha Wadaker, Annenberg Radio News. The lack of women directors in Hollywood is catching the eye of the federal government. In the coming days, the Federal Equal Employment Opportunity Commission will begin interviewing female directors to form an action plan against gender discrimination in the film and TV industry. This news comes on the heels of a study by USC Annenberg's Media, Diversity, and Social Change Initiative. The MDSC looked into the underrepresentation of female directors at the top 10 film festivals worldwide. Samira Jordan digs deeper into what the study found out about the global film industry's diversity problem.
The MDSC's research tackles a central question: how many female directors are in the film scene? The researchers studied the gender distribution of directors across top worldwide film festivals and career challenges for female directors. They found a massive gender gap in the film world. Stacey Smith is a USC Associate Professor of Communication, and she led the study. She says there's a gender ratio of 2.13 men to every one woman for directing positions for short films.
This is really problematic because people have been articulating that females represent 50% of film schools in the country. And yet our data show that they're less than a third at all of the top festivals with short content. So there's a disconnect in terms of what people are saying is going on educationally and what we see at the first stop or the first opportunity for directing a short.
Smith says there's an advantage to putting women in the director's chair.
When you put a woman behind the camera, girls and women not only change on screen, but the proportion of underrepresented racial and ethnic groups also change on screen. We saw 37% of the leads and co-leads were from individuals from underrepresented racial or ethnic groups. So how do we counter Hollywood? We have to support those places that are promoting stories by, for, and about those groups that are typically marginalized and excluded from positions of power in Hollywood.
The study's authors conducted its research by studying LunaFest, a women's short film festival. They found that of the 115 directors involved in LunaFest, 75% do not pursue work in major film or television production. Smith and her co-researchers say audiences don't know what they're missing by not having more films directed by women. Archer Tofan is an undergraduate USC student who helped with the study. He says it's given him a different perspective.
When I go to movies now, I tend to be more assertive, more inquisitive of who is on screen, why is that you know, there's less representation, why is the story, how is the storyline shaped by the characters and by the diversity of the characters in that movie. But that's me coming from being exposed to this question. But if you think about people who are not exposed and have no background or information about this issue, I wonder how do they perceive and how do they look at the films, and they don't even know what they're missing on because they're not exposed to that information. So it's a problem.
The study points to various barriers that hold women back from the director's chair, such as family obligations, lack of funding, and the belief that women can only direct certain kinds of films. Researchers hope that by bringing these issues to attention, more will be done to broaden the opportunities for female filmmakers at all levels in the industry. Samira Jordan, Annenberg Radio News.
Six NASA astronauts are isolated on a volcano in Hawaii for the next 11 months as part of a Mars simulation experiment. One of them, Shayna Gifford, talked to us about what it's like to feel very, very far from home.
This is Shayna Gifford, reporting live from simulated Mars. Our hatch door closed on August 28th, 2015. Our mission here is going to be 1 year, the longest Mars simulation that NASA has ever attempted. HISEAS is the Hawaiian Space Exploration Analog and Simulation. What that means is that the long-duration Mars simulation here on Earth, specifically on a very large volcano named Mauna Loa on the Big Island of Hawaii. These missions started in 2013 as a food study. And then in 2014, NASA awarded $1.2 million to the University of Hawaii to continue the study as a study of human factors. You need to know about sleep. You need to know about relationships. You need to know about people's ability to communicate back home. Is it effective? How much of it do they need? You need to know how many movies they watch and what they eat. So those studies have been going on since 2014. Essentially, what we have to do on any regular day is we have to do certain tests. We have to use a Second Life simulation. It's basically a big video game to try and communicate with the people back home. We have to do a series of video games that study what people are willing to sacrifice for the team benefit. On top of that, we do our own research, and sometimes we have to go on EVA. EVA is extravehicular activity. We put on our spacesuits and we go outside to do a number of tasks. The only way we ever leave the dome is in spacesuits. It feels otherworldly here. That's not to say it feels like another planet. Other planets are very, very different places. The sky is different. All told, the thing that really keeps it from being off the planet is the lack of the sense of danger. Mars and space in general are not designed to let you live. Not humans, anyway. I don't live every day with that gnawing fear that something out there is going to get me. Here, I know there's air out there. We have every reason to believe we'll succeed. So far, everything is going quite well. This has been Shayna Gifford, Chief Medical and Safety Officer of the High Seas 4 Hawaiian Space Simulation Mission.
If you've ever planned a wedding, you've probably made your way to the original L.A. flower market. Mar Altabitian found more than just florals blossoming inside.
The largest flower market in the country doesn't look like much from the outside. It's in a nondescript industrial building just a few steps away from Skid Row. Ticket clerk Alejandro Campos says the market is a bright spot in a gritty area.
And we're just trying to keep it like safe for the public, for they can enjoy their time here at the flower mart and just, you know, see beautiful flowers.
For years, the flower market was one of the best kept secrets of the floral industry. But as more people discovered it through social media, the market's become an increasingly popular weekend destination. Inside the market, it's hard to imagine a more vibrant scene. Customers walk through seemingly endless rows of colorful blooms. The sweet aroma of fresh roses fills the air. Jackie Hoffman and her husband come to the market every weekend from their home in Calabasas.
Because it's such a joy to see all the fresh flowers. And it's a seasonal thing, and it just makes us happy. And everybody's got a smile on their face, and it's just a wonderful way to spend a Saturday morning.
The sense of community between vendors here is palpable. Phil Sanchez is the owner of a wholesale flower shop. His coworkers are literally family.
The guy across the street is my brother, both of them. My uncle is across the street, two other uncles, and my cousin. The plant place, Victor, Jan's Flowers, he's my cousin. And we're all related somehow.
Like any workplace, love blooms here, too.
You know, they meet someone here and they get married, so they become family of us.
But it's not all about romance. The market also encourages meaningful business relationships between customers and vendors. Florist Stacy Tackets is buying succulents for a wedding. When she first started coming here 2 years ago, she didn't know anyone. But over time, she's developed a rapport with vendors.
Where we're at right now, these are my guys. And like I have the one guy's telephone number and he'll like text me when good stuff comes in. I think they see you so often, you just start interacting and finding out more about each other and developing that like natural relationship, and it's like very symbiotic.
This market has been around for almost 100 years and it's seen a lot of changes. The 50,000 square foot facility now runs entirely on solar power. Even though most of the flowers come from overseas, an increasing number of vendors are selling locally grown products. But two things that haven't changed, the variety of beautiful flowers and sense of community.
Who wouldn't want to come down here? This place is heaven. Being surrounded by florals.
If you want to get the best blooms, come when the market opens at 3 a.m. But by noon, everything's closed up.
This one's better.
Mar Altabitian, Annenberg Radio News.
USC football is no stranger to the glitz and glam of Hollywood. Last night, the newest ESPN 30 for 30 film chronicling the Pete Carroll era of Trojan football premiered. Daniel Tran was there to talk to the players about how they felt about the film and their football pasts.
It was a calm Wednesday night at the Landmark Theater in Hollywood before the atmosphere turned electric with anticipation. Trojan War is a documentary that is a part of ESPN's 30 for 30 movie series. It chronicles the Pete Carroll era at the University of Southern California, an era that included two national championships, a 34-game winning streak, and unprecedented NCAA sanctions. The movie uses the 2005 national championship game at the Rose Bowl against the Texas Longhorns as one of the key turning points of the era. A mix of Hollywood types and former Trojan football stars were in the audience, including Heisman Trophy winner and former USC quarterback Matt Leinart.
I'm excited to see it. Plus, it's just great to see a lot of old teammates, you know, and a lot of guys, and it's kind of like a blast from the past. So,
Former Trojan running back Lendell White, a.k.a. Thunder, was also at the screening. He was part of the Thunder Lightning duo with Reggie Bush.
I think the most memorable is when we won our second national championship in Oklahoma, and when we did in such convincing fashion. I think that's what stands out the most. You know, there's some heartbreaks in there, but, you know, I think that was the most memorable.
And Trojan War was directed by Aaron Rashawn Thomas. He hopes the audience will be taken back in time and feel the hold that USC football had on the entire city.
I really hope that they can get even just an ounce of what I felt during that era and watching the games and really feeling like anything was, you know, anything could happen at any second. You had dynamic players like Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, Linda White, and such dynamic personalities that, you know, it was just exciting. Every play was exciting, and even on the sidelines was exciting.
After the movie ended, the reaction was positive, even from people who aren't really sports fans, like Daniel Paredes.
So I like seeing movies like this that kind of introduce you to both sides of the story. The front, you know, you could watch a game on Saturday but not know about the drama behind it, and I think that really brought a lot forward to, you know, to the viewer.
The movie did not turn a blind eye to controversy either. After a four-year investigation, the NCAA imposed sanctions against the USC Trojans because running back Reggie Bush accepted impermissible benefits. The NCAA said USC showed a lack of institutional control. But none of that matters to former USC wide receiver and executive producer of the film, Keyshawn Johnson.
Yeah, who cares at this point? I mean, we won. All right?
The documentary will be shown on ESPN on October 13th, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Daniel Tran, Annenberg Radio News.
The USC Trojans take on the Washington Huskies tonight at the Coliseum. The resident Trojan experts at Sports Scene took a look at some potential drama in tonight's matchup and broke down what the Trojans need to come away with a win.
Now I'm Connor McGlynn. The number 17 USC football team is back in action in an unusual Thursday night primetime matchup against the University of Washington at the Coliseum. The Pac-12 battle has an added boost of interest as it's the first time head coach Steve Sarkisian and five members of his assistant coaching staff, including Justin Wilcox, Peter Sermon, Keith Hayward, Johnny Nansen, and Marcus Tuiasosopo, are facing their former team since joining the Trojans in 2014. We caught up with some of the coaches to get their feelings on the reunion.
I respect those guys a bunch. I recruited them. They're good kids. They play hard. I know that I want to win, just like every other football game. So I think my feelings are really clear.
So Jackson, with USC coming off the bye and Notre Dame looming, this could be somewhat of a trap game for USC. Do you think that they're going to fall into that trend, or will the Sark reunion kind of take precedent?
Well, the Notre Dame game is always one of the biggest of the year. Traveling to South Bend next week to take on a rival that's ranked in the top 15 in the country is definitely on the minds of most USC fans, but I think Sark and the coaching staff are focused on this week. Having the extra bye week off, plus going up against Sark's former team, I think it's going to really have them focused for Washington.
I think that the reunion will definitely play a factor into it and keep them focused, but they're going to need to continue to play at an upper level because with over 40 players from Southern California on this Husky team and over 30 that were recruited by Sark himself to play for UW, it's going to be a little difficult and they're going to really want this win.
USC is a 17-point favorite on Thursday. What are your keys for the game for the Trojans to come out on top?
I think if USC wants to win this game, they're going to need to establish a run game early. Washington comes into this game with the top total defense in the Pac-12 and also the top rushing defense, allowing just 104.5 yards a game. So if USC wants to pull ahead like they're expected to, they can't struggle like they did against ASU. They need to be able to establish themselves. Trey Madden needs to be able to make holes for himself, and Ronald Jones and Justin Davis need to be able to reach the second level.
Beloved Dodger announcer Vin Scully had a medical procedure today that will keep him off the mic for the remainder of the baseball season. The 87-year-old Scully is considered one of the greatest sportscasters of the 20th century. He's been the voice of all Dodger home games for 66 years. Doctors say Scully is resting comfortably, and he's planning to be back on the job next season. That's it for From Where We Are. We had help today from Maria Pena, Hannah Vicente, Kate Dowd, Joe Marks, and TiVo Claris Gauthier. Our board operator is Lexi McAvinci, Martha Daniel is our producer, and for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Carla Javier.